This is a Suno India production, and you're listening to Gasping for Breath.
Dr. Ashwin Rajneesh works as an emergency physician at NS Memorial Institute of Medical Sciences in Thiruvananthapuram. In Kerala, the first wave of COVID hit around September-October of 2020. Some of the staff in the hospital were complaining of lingering symptoms even weeks after COVID infection.
By, say, September to October of 2020, we noted, meaning a lot of our staff were getting infected as well. So initially, it was all like a short influenza like illness. That was the general thinking for COVID. That's primarily a respiratory infection at that point of time. Now, usually when we get to influenza, there is a period by which after influenza where they're generally ill, they need a little time to bounce back, right? So that's when we noticed that things were taking a little longer than usual for a usual viral infection. And we would expect symptom improvement maybe in about in a few days post the disease. Whereas we noted that sometimes it took more than that. It took up to 2 weeks. And majority of them did become better after 2 weeks. However, a few of our staff, I'm primarily focusing on other healthcare workers who were with us, who took longer than 2 weeks to get better. However, we noticed that a few staff among them, they couldn't, who were previously active, healthy, and, you know, the really vibrant staff. These are staff nurses, these are attender boys and so on, junior doctors, and even senior doctors, in fact. They started becoming decompensated. That was really the word for it, decompensated. They couldn't complete a sentence. They were breathless. They couldn't climb stairs. They all mentioned disabling fatigue. So palpitations is something which is almost universal to many of these patients who were our staff who were complaining of post-COVID. So if you have to ask me what are the symptoms which we really picked up was fatigue, palpitations, and breathlessness. A few of them had probably even more severe symptoms, like they had syncopal episodes when they were, which were totally unprovoked as well. A syncopal episode is an episode where you black out. So we had staff who were doing their normal routine activity, nothing too strenuous, but they just blacked out while they were doing that. And overall, there was a lot of decreased effort tolerance. People who could previously do a lot of activity, be really active in clinical practice, in care, they just couldn't do that. And a lot of them complained of anxiety. And they were anxious to a point where they felt that they were dying. Things are not becoming better, they are dying. So that's when we thought we'd look into it a little more.
Hi, I'm Menaka Rao, reporting for this episode of Gasping for Breath. In the previous two episodes, we looked at how people experienced long COVID, or what is called post-COVID condition by the World Health Organization, and how the symptoms are dismissed by the medical community. This episode is an attempt to understand long COVID from the scientific community, the doctors and the scientists. One of the manifestations of long COVID is spots, which Dr. Ashwin noticed in a small cohort of health workers way back in 2020. Dr. Ashwin noticed one thing that was unusual among these people who complained of lingering symptoms even after 2 months.
One thing which is peculiar was, you know, all these staff of mine who developed these symptoms, they were told to take rest, right? Go home, take rest, take a little more time off. And they came back worse, okay? And that's really characteristic about POTS, that the more you take rest or you become deconditioned, the POTS worsens.
As a physician at Christian Medical College, that is CMC Vellore, a reputed medical college, he had seen something similar in people after they recovered from post-viral illnesses.
I was working in CMC Vellore prior to this. So quite a lot of patients with viral infections such as influenza, HSV is herpes simplex, and varicella, which is the virus which causes chickenpox as well. And we noticed that in their recovery phase, that is from the severe acute illness, when they recovered also, they had a lot of dysautonomic syndromes, mostly post-inflammatory, maybe autoimmune mediated, some sort of encephalitis, and all sort of dysautonomic syndromes. And one of the presentations with dysautonomia is orthostatic hypertension and tachycardia syndromes as well. There's a very small fraction of them who have POTS-like syndrome, and which is probably why, like we had discussed earlier, we probably may be having a very similar POTS-like deconditioned physical status after many viral infections. This may be similar to many viral infections, but just the sheer magnitude of numbers, the humongous number of COVID all happening almost simultaneously, is why we're seeing so many of these post-COVID syndromes, and we're able to identify the syndrome.
There are some ways in which long COVID presents. The WHO defined post-COVID condition, focusing on the fact that the condition lasts longer than 3 months of the possible COVID infection. Remember, some of them do not test positive or do not get tests, so diagnose clinically. The definition also talks about three common symptoms, including fatigue, shortness of breath, and cognitive dysfunction. And it has an impact on everyday functioning. The symptoms, WHO states, could fluctuate or relapse over a period of time. This definition, Dr. Asad Khan says, is not very practical. Dr. Asad Khan is a respiratory medicine consultant with UK's National Health Services in Manchester. He got COVID in November 2020.
And was very active before, and very hands-on, very involved both in family life and also at work, and quite fit too. My initial illness was mild. You know, I was on a COVID ward looking after 28 sick COVID patients at once, 7 days a week, and looking after the juniors. I was off work for a month, mainly because I was fatigued, and went back to work during Christmas week. I was just doing some desk work, and it was only 2 hours a day, and literally that weekend, it was as if, you know, a bomb had exploded inside my body. Can only describe it as that. I became acutely confused, drowsy, felt that, like, my whole body was on fire, chest pain, palpitations, pain absolutely everywhere, going to the toilet every 10 minutes, rashes involving the entire head and neck that kept changing position. And it was all very puzzling because I thought I was over my COVID, and I thought I was actually going mad.
Since doctors are not of much help and they dismissed his symptoms, despite him being a doctor himself, he had to take charge of his own health and research around long COVID. He spoke to India's long COVID support group a few months ago. He felt that it is also important to state clearly what long COVID is not. It is clearly not psychological, as we've discussed earlier in great detail, where doctors dismiss symptoms saying that it's a sign of anxiety.
It is not PICS. PICS is post-intensive care syndrome. Doesn't mean that you have to be in intensive care, but what it means is that you had a very severe initial illness requiring hospitalization. So those patients behave more like a traditional pneumonia recovery, and they respond well to rehabilitation and exercise. That is not what we would normally recognize as long COVID, although there are some people who have a mixture of both. So there are, I know some people who were hospitalized who have PICS, but they also have long COVID, which is more of a sort of relapsing, remitting picture.
Long COVID, Dr. Asad says, can affect all parts of the body. One of the manifestations is fatigue, or what is called chronic fatigue syndrome.
I just thought it would be useful to touch upon post-exertional symptom exacerbation. I don't like malaise because malaise just makes it sound quite benign. And it can mean different things to different people. So my post-exertional symptom exacerbation is nausea and insomnia, which is a delightful combination. So it starts at 12 hours after activity and peaks at 24 hours. So I've had, you know, 3-4 days of no sleep with constant nausea, and it can be triggered just by, you know, perhaps an intense discussion with the family, or, you know, even walking a short distance. I think the key thing here is the delay, and that's why people don't make the link. I'm sure a lot of you would have been advised to exercise, and this is not okay. And there is evidence that this is harmful.
Dr. Asad gave the example of a British MP who had myalgic encephalomyelitis or chronic fatigue syndrome, or what is called ME/CFS in the medical community.
So Bryn Mawjohn was a British MP. He had ME, and in 1987, as you know, the diagnostic feature of ME is post-exertional symptom exacerbation. You can't diagnose it without that. And he was told by his doctor to exercise. So he was exercising in the parliamentary gym, came out, was trying to walk up an incline and dropped dead. I don't know if there are any long COVID services in India. They're probably not. But if there are any people who are dealing with this, they have to screen for this before recommending that people undertake activity.
Another manifestation is mast cell activation. Mast cell is a kind of white blood cell that is found in connective tissues all over the body, especially under the skin, near blood vessels, in nerves, lungs, intestines. It plays an important role in how the immune system responds. They cause immediate allergic reactions in some people. The science around this is, however, highly debated within the medical community, with many dismissing it and many not knowing much about it.
Mast cell activation, again, a lot of people don't believe in this, but it is real, as I'm sure some of you, well, many of you will recognize. So the virus activates these cells called mast cells. This causes release of histamine and other inflammatory mediators. And the key thing here is the suddenness of the symptoms. And they seem to affect different parts of the body, and they seem to be unrelated, but they're not, because the mechanism is the same. So a lot of skin problems, like I had, you can get palpitations, shortness of breath. A lot of people get abdominal symptoms, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, nasal symptoms, so watery eyes, watery nose, congestion, going to the toilet a lot because there are mast cells in your bladder, so they become activated, so you can you pee a lot. And because there are mast cells in your brain as well, you can get cognitive dysfunction. So I had this intermittent confusion where I'd be okay one minute and the next minute I've been talking nonsense. Not all will have all symptoms, so it's just important to be aware of that.
People with long COVID are also prone to blood clots. More and more research now shows that COVID impacts the vascular structure, the blood vessels, leading to clots in many people.
What we do know is that it is a thrombotic illness, so we are prone to blood clots, and a lot of people are developing late pulmonary emboli, even with normal D-dimer. Typically, people will have this test called a CT pulmonary angiogram, but it does not detect the small clots. For that, you need a VQ scan, which, again, it's not very easy to get, but even a VQ can be normal in the presence of microclots. It's just being aware of that. It can cause any kind of cardiac problems, so heart attacks, abnormal heart rhythms. I have pericarditis, so inflammation of the lining of the heart. A lot of people have myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle itself. Often it doesn't get picked up on echocardiogram, so you need an MRI scan of the heart. Any kind of endocrine organ can become affected. I've become pre-diabetic. I was not before. And a lot of people have become frankly diabetic as a result of COVID. And I think this is all due to ischemia. So reduced blood supply to the pancreas, but also maybe some contribution from antibodies. So the same thing can happen with your adrenals. So some people have developed adrenal insufficiency, which can make you really tired. I have a colleague who's developed really bad thyroiditis. So her T3 and T4 are unmeasurable. They're so high. I think a lot of women have developed issues with their menstruation, but also with fertility. And premature menopause seems to be an issue as well. Again, if you think about the underlying problem, if you reduce the blood supply to the reproductive organs, it's hardly surprising that these things are happening. If there are any women of childbearing age and they're on the combined pill, you need to stop that because, as you know, the combined pill can increase your risk of clots. So important to use a different form of contraception. neural manifestations, again, anything, strokes, seizures.
One of the other manifestations of long COVID is dysautonomia. Dysautonomia is a dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system, which takes care of seemingly automatic symptoms of the body, such as heart rate, digestion, etc. It is a balance between the sympathetic nervous system that takes care of fight or flight response and the parasympathetic nervous system, which is supposed to calm you down. POTS is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. It is a form of dysautonomia that affects the blood flow. This is Dr. Ashwin.
Imagine you're having a cell phone in your hand, one of the modern cell phones, which can kind of pick up whether you're, figure out whether you're holding it in the horizontal position or the landscape position or the vertical position, which is the portrait position. So it's got a sensor, which the phone uses, the gyroscope. Very similarly, the human body, it has sensors to figure out whether you're in your supine position or your lying down position or in an upright position. And there are two components of the nervous system which help with it, which are your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system. Now, both your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system together are called your autonomic nervous system. And with the combination with the chemoreceptors and the baroreceptors, which help maintain and figure out what pressure and what posture you're in, they all help to maintain orthostasis. Orthostasis is basically like blood is fluid, and fluid respects gravity. So technically, if you stand up, all your blood should be in your feet, but it's not. It's maintained by various other things such as muscle tone and so on, which are controlled by the autonomic nervous system. So when you have issues with the autonomic nervous system, such as dysautonomia, this regulation doesn't, which normally seamlessly takes place, doesn't occur the way it should. So as a result of this, posture and other reflexes do not get the appropriate adjustment by the nervous system, and hence subsequently the muscles as well, leading to issues such as POTS and orthostatic symptoms. Now, postural tachycardia syndrome is basically a syndrome where you have orthostatic intolerance. So basically, you're not able to make these adjustments, and the body compensates for it by increasing the heart rate, right? The next spectrum of this is orthostatic hypotension, where along with the increase in the heart rate, you also have a fall in the blood pressure. The next next step in the pathology is a syncope, where you go into loss of consciousness because of this, right? So these are probably three steps which take place. POTS is the beginning step. This hypotension is when they start developing low blood or a fallen blood pressure because of a postural change. And syncope is when they lose consciousness because of this.
There are three leading theories identifying the cause of this wide spectrum of long COVID. They were written in great detail in Science Journal recently. One of the theories is that there are micro blood clots in vessels that are not detected in commonly done tests such as D-dimer. Another one is the possible persistence of virus itself, even after the active infection stage is over. And the third one is that the immune system in long COVID patients has gone completely haywire and is unable to reset itself from the active mode during the infection to an ideal one after the COVID infection dies down. And these three mechanisms possibly work in tandem in long COVID patients. Resia Petronas, a physiologist at Stellenbosch University in South Africa, and her colleagues found microclots among those with long COVID. Dr. Asit says that her work came as a ray of hope when he had lost all.
You know, I became aware of Resia's work. I think she's a hero to all of us, isn't she? And her finding the microclots and publishing them came just in time in August 21. This is definitely playing a part in all of us. I'm not saying this is the full story, but it's a big part of the story. And in summary, what she found was the blood of people with either acute or long COVID shows these insoluble microclots.
One of the challenges is the diagnostic mechanism for these microclots. They are not detected by the regular D-dimer test, as I said. They are only visible under fluorescence or bright field microscope. So Dr. Ressia is now working on a lab process that is more accessible. Dr. Asad underwent a procedure called HELP epheresis from a German doctor.
Dr. Yeager, the woman who saved my life, she put me on to HELP epheresis, which is a procedure where the blood is washed, but it's removed out of one arm, and it's run through a machine, which is a bit like a dialysis machine. The red cells are separated from the plasma, and the plasma, which has the clots, is then precipitated over a filter, which has heparin inside it. The heparin binds the clot material, so that is removed from the plasma. And the plasma that has been washed is combined again with the red cells and returned to the other arm. So that's the procedure.
He showed a picture of his blood after the procedure.
You can see at the bottom, there's this very irregular white material, and that's the fibrin.
Dr. Asad says that this treatment has helped him feel better. He says anticoagulants also work well, though not studied well enough. Studies on whether epheresis treatment works is also underway. In the case of dysautonomia, as is the case of many manifestations of long COVID, very few physicians know about this disorder or can treat this disorder. So Dr. Sarath Menon is a specialist in dysautonomia and he practices in Kochi city in Kerala. He says that an average diagnosis of dysautonomia can take about 3 to 4 years. He explains that dysautonomia is a spectrum and physicians like him need to tailor-make the treatment.
Autonomic disorder is a spectrum. So you can have the most mildest form to the most severe form. So that is a spectrum of disease. It's basically a tailor-made management depending upon the severity of the disease, the results of the test, and taking into the consideration of all the organs which are affected. And so we'll look back to the previous medical conditions also, which there is any kind of interaction of drugs, which is really contributing to the disease. So it's a comprehensive way of treating. So I wouldn't say that that is all the dysautonomia patients are completely curable, but many of the subsets, like minor dysautonomia, like what you say, like an inappropriate sinus arrhythmia, that's the most commonest dysautonomic which you get in post-COVID. They will just have their heartbeat, nothing else has been affected. Their BPs are normal, your other organs are fine, but they still are having the problem. So this is the most commonest dysautonomia in post-COVID period. And this is basically a self-remitting, a curable disease. And you can start with medications also to symptomatically improve the patient. But this is a curable, POTS is curable, but there are still certain severe immune dysautonomia, like which have refractory neurogenic orthostatic hypotension. These are the different varieties of dysautonomia, which requires long-term immunomodulator therapy. And sometimes with a period of 2 years and all, it gets to cure. So that doesn't mean that you have to continue on this drug for a longer period of time, but still, I would say around a 5% of dysautonomia cases can be refractory.
Dr. Asad says that there are some things that the long COVID community needs from the medical and the scientific community.
What is needed? I mean, we need to stop the psychologization. The assessments should be biomedical. So it should be a clinician who knows about the different ways in which long COVID can present. You need a generalist. The problem is, everywhere, medicine has become so specialized that people will only think about their organ, the heart or the lung. Nobody is trying to tie everything together and think, what is going on here? What is this illness that's affecting every part of the body? And we need very urgent studies of drugs such as anticoagulants, antivirals.
Though Dr. Asad Khan feels better than he used to, he's yet to completely recover. Long COVID has impacted many health workers like him, nurses and doctors alike. Many have been unable to return to work. An estimated 1.8 million in the UK, about 3% of the population, have reported having long COVID symptoms. Of these, about 2.3 lakhs of people have symptoms for 2 years. In India, no survey or a large-scale study has been done to check how many people suffer from long COVID. The extent of the problem is completely unknown. In the next episode of Gasping for Breath, we will talk about how long COVID affects a very basic function in your life, work.